Keeping it real. Really, really real. It's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that knows all podcast lives matter. And now, did he fire 6 shots or only 5? It's Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Well, hello. Hello, everybody. I didn't know you came in. It is the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast again. And as you just heard from my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, this is your Medicare expert, Doug Jones. So happy to bring my expertise to you in ways that I hope you'll find are entertaining, or at least not stupid and not challenging and not boring. That's the goal here, but only you can tell me, or only you can decide for yourself whether or not I've achieved those goals at the end of the episode. So I'm sitting here thinking about Medicare. And when I think about Medicare, sometimes I think about our 30-second radio spot that we created last year. And I'm going to listen and see if Randy picks up my thoughts and plays that spot for us right now.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
Yes, he's a genius. He's a genius. Thank you, Randy. That tells the very short, succinct story of why we're here. We're here to help people approaching Medicare figure out what they have to do, and then we're going to help them execute it if they want us to help. And then we're going to allow them to wipe their hands and walk away from Medicare, at least the important Medicare decisions, and then just live happily ever after, having their medical bills paid at a very reasonable cost and not having to think about the complexities of Medicare faulty roll. And helping me do that is going to be my engineer, my close personal friend, my financial guru. That would be Randy Carson. Hello, Randy.
Yes, yes, I'm here. I can hear you all the way across the country.
I'm surprised, really, because my voice, I think, still has a little residue of that flu I was suffering from the other day.
Well, I think your big boy mic has canceled out all the audio problems.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful. Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it.
Because you are sounding good. I really can't complain about your quality. And, oh, by the way, I've told you this before, but the signal is good. It's just like you've got you're wrapped around your router next door.
Well, I'm so happy to hear that because I'm not any closer to the router, but I'm in a different room that is probably has more walls between me and the router, but maybe the router is more directional than I thought it was. So anyway, as long as this works, I'm fine with it. And so this is where I'm going to be podcasting until I sell the house, which I hope will be soon. It's only been six damn years.
Yeah, well, that's an inside joke. That's an inside joke for the audience.
It's like living in a museum. Mary complains about having to make the bed so much when we have a showing that we sleep standing up next to the beds.
If I was laying down, I'd be laying on that bed, but I can't touch it because Mary won't want to make it again.
It's huge. It takes a 2-man crew to get it looking good again. And, you know, we have pictures of where the pillows should go. Some designer threw 1 million pillows on the bed and said, perfect. Well, now we have photographic evidence of where each pillow goes. So we sit there and go, I think this one goes here. No, no, it doesn't. It goes over here.
No, no, that's not where it goes.
That would look stupid.
Oh my God. The other day when you picked up your camera and showed me out your back window that to me on this side, it looks like you're in a yacht, you know, and you're up against the windows on a yacht, you know, having a nice beer, watching the ocean go by.
Sure.
And then Doug took his camera and he showed me out the back. He's got much more HVAC equipment back there than my university used to have.
Yeah, you know, it's a pretty intense house. It was built by a woman who had pretty much all the money in the world from the age of 13. And so when she snapped her fingers, people jumped and they provided solutions that were above and beyond what normal people would try to do. And so this house had five furnaces in it when my parents bought it back in 1985. It was built in 72. Electricity was virtually free back then. And so if you go out in our front yard and look behind these bushes, you'll see a giant transformer. Normally you see these transformers up on telephone poles and once in a while lightning will strike one or it'll fall off or start smoking or something. This is a big giant industrial transformer that sits in our yard and it has never had a problem and it's never going to, I don't think. The power to the house is three phase and what we had when it was built was four electrical resistance furnaces and four electric resistance air filters, one for each furnace, and then four air conditioning compressors. And then a fifth furnace was a regular hot air, a forced hot air furnace, just in case the other ones broke. Actually, in case the power went off, which it never did. Plus, there's a generator to handle it's not a huge generator because it only had to handle the forced air furnace, which was designed to keep the house above freezing, not to make it comfy and warm, but just to keep it above freezing. And so the thing was pretty well designed, but the electric bills were somewhere in the neighborhood of $1,200 to $1,500 a month. And so I decided maybe it was time to switch over to gas. So I had somebody switch all of the furnaces out with gas replacements, and that changed everything. The electrical bills are much smaller. The gas bills are now much higher.
Yeah, I think you told me at one point in time you got a lot of fireplaces in the house, yeah?
No, only one working fireplace in the house, and that's a gas fireplace.
Oh, for some reason I had it in my head. You had lots of fireplaces.
In the new house, we're working on three of them.
Oh, okay. I must have misunderstood because I love fireplaces. And are these fireplaces in the new digs? Are they actual real ones or gas?
The main one that was there is was transformed from being real to gas. Yeah. We're adding another one on the other side of the chimney. It's going to be one of these fake pictures of a fireplace. It's, you know, dancing flames.
Oh, dancing flames.
Yeah, exactly.
And crackling sound. Yeah.
And then the third fireplace is going in the master bedroom, and that's going to be gas because who wants to be hauling wood in the middle of the night? So
there is that problem, yeah.
But it is 4 acres of mature trees, so it's going to supply plenty of firewood. So I'm going to build an outdoor fire thing, and so I can burn up some of those logs that I wind up with.
Well, I am really looking forward to getting the video tour of your new house because I know you're making you had a huge decision the other day about the front door.
Yeah, and then guess what? Mary changed her mind, and so the huge decision got remade, and we now have a different colored front door than we used to have.
What color is it now?
Well, actually, the door itself and the side light, it's like 70 inches wide, and so the door, I think, is, 40 inches wide, 45 inches, and then the side light makes up the rest, and it's all glass, floor-to-ceiling glass, but there's a frame around each of those, so it was all what the color of that frame was going to be.
Oh, okay. All right. I got you.
It was going to be red, kind of a muted red. And then she all of a sudden woke up one morning and said, I don't like that anymore.
So, Mary must be a real interesting woman to go car shopping with.
I never have. Never have. She and I have different opinions. When she goes car shopping, I say, enjoy it, you know, get what you want. And then I'll go over there and make sure she's not getting ripped off. But when buy a car, it's likely to be older than you and I are put together.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I told you the story about Margaret. You know, whenever we go on a dealer's lot, it's not what car it is. It's not how much it is. Oh, look at the blue one over there.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Isn't that kind of it's only skin deep.
Oh, dear. I know. Well, you know something, Doug? I
bet you're going to tell me we have to quit moving around.
I think we better get down to some Medicare business. But before we do that, I've got a couple quick, and I'm failing miserably at this in past podcasts, but to stump the insurance expert, okay? You have been pulling off.
Are you and Dominic trying to gang up on me again? Is that what's going on here?
Dominic doesn't have, he doesn't have any part of this one today, but I've got, I hope Dominic is working on some from his end, because I am trying my best to stump you, and I'm giving you stuff that you should never have any idea of knowing, and very often you do. You are a very renaissance sort of a guy, and you know a lot of stuff, dude.
That's going to run out very quickly. That's like the Platte River. It's a mile wide and an inch deep.
All right, so I've got, okay, here we go. This is what I'm doing for you today. It's an insurance question.
Okay.
And I'm going to give you some hints. The word insurance was originally derived from a French word. And it's kind of irrelevant as to what the French word is. But what I want you to answer for me is, what did that French word actually mean in French?
Oh, boy. This is not an insurance question. This is a French question. And I got to tell you, I took French at a very early age in grade school, went to a top-notch grade school. So I think it was like grades 5 and 6, I took French. And then I took 2 years of French in high school. And I took a placement test when I went to college to get credit for the French I'd already taken. And I did so poorly on it that I had to take all the French at half credit, which was really like torture. So I can't really even hazard a guess on this. What did the French thing mean? It meant to probably replace.
Well, I'll give you more hints. This one, you're really going to be surprised by the answer to this. It really came from a French word to mean, I can't pronounce it as the French pronounce it, but it's spelled E-N-S-U-R-E-R, insure, yeah. Which eventually, basically morphed into insure or insurance.
Well, you know, you cross the channel and you got a whole different spelling.
But the original French word, E-N-S-U-R-E-R, meant originally an engagement to be married.
Oh, really? Wow, that's pretty weird. Well, I got to tell you that word ends in ER, and that would make it an infinitive. So words in French that end in ER are verbs, and that would be the to of something, T-O, and then in this case, marry. So to wed or something like that is what it means. So, you know, watch for those infinitives when you see a French word that ends in ER. That's going to be a verb, and you're like to sit down or, you know, to drive your car or to have a couple of beers.
I like that one.
Yeah, there you go. I bet the Frenchies do too.
All right, here's one more quick one.
Okay.
Most large golf courses have this type of insurance so they don't lose their shirt when they have to give one of these prizes away.
Okay, hole-in-one insurance.
Oh, my God, you know it.
Well, it's not really fair, but my wife was the office manager for our local country club for 25 years. And I know that I've seen her play golf, and I know that the club was never in danger. But I will say that it's the kind of thing that you're aware of. When they want their members to get out there and use that course all the time, then they will try to attract them with prizes. And a hole-in-one can be a very lucrative way to go through life, just making holes in one if you're able to do that. I almost did it once on a par three hole in a different course. But That's a story for another time.
That's a story for another time. Well, I am going to pull out the big hammer now. So,
alrighty,
we need to get to some Medicare.
All you have to do is turn off your microphone, and eventually, I'm going to figure out there's nobody to talk to there. Okay, I'm a little trepidatious with our content for today because it's something I've never done before, and because this is a Medicare podcast, I don't know what the reaction is going to be from the audience, but we're going to give it a shot here. I'm going to change it up a little bit, broaden our horizons, and hopefully provide a little bit of interest for people, because people contemplating Social Security enrollment are roughly in the same age. Oh boy, I hope I didn't do that.
No, that they're calling in as we speak.
Oh boy, like, don't do it, Doug. Don't do
it. No, no, no. Oh.
So anyway, what we're going to take a look at today would be an easy, non-threatening review of one element of Social Security. What I found was an article from the The Motley Fool. Somebody at the Motley Fool, Diane Medawa, only I can't really, M-T-E-T-W-A, Metetua. Anyway, she wrote a short article about Social Security, and what she addressed in this article was the four must-knows before claiming Social Security. She, according to this, is saying, here are four elements that should be an important part of your decision to enroll in Social Security. Now, just as a little review, when you're age 62, you're allowed to start taking Social Security. And when you're 65, or actually nowadays, it's going to be more like 66 and some months maybe, that's your full retirement age, where the 100% of the calculated Social Security benefit would be yours for the taking. And that will still grow at a rate, I'm told, of about 8% until you turn 70. And after you've turned 70, the monthly benefit that you could increase by not taking Social Security would not increase anymore. So you could wait until the cows came home. You could wait until you're 90 years old, and it's not going to be any better than it was at age 70. So that's pretty much the limit of my understanding of Social Security. I would like to think that most of the listeners know more than that about it. So I'm going to plow through this article, and we'll see if Randy comes up with some of his typical questions. This article starts out, you may be someone who looks forward to the day you retire, or you could be someone who plans on working for as long as possible. No matter which category you fall into, you should do some retirement planning and preparation for this major milestone. And if you're eligible for it, your Social Security payments could play a major role in how comfortably you live once you've stopped working. Getting the most out of this benefit will involve knowing these four things. So four things that you should know before you decide what to do about Social Security. Number one, your FRA. That's, I believe, full retirement age. When you take your Social Security determines how much your monthly payment will be. If you take it at your full retirement age, you'll receive your standard benefit. That age is 66 if you were born between 1943 and 1954. That age is 67 if you were born after 1967. And somewhere in between if you were born between 55 and 59. You can take this benefit as early as age 62, but your benefit will be reduced for every year that you take it early. You can also delay it as late as age 70, and you'll get a pay increase for every year that you wait. For example, if your standard benefit is $2,200, your reduced payment at age 62 will be $1,650, and your increased payment at age 70 will be $2,900. The amount that you receive each month could determine how well you can pay all of your bills. An estimate of your life expectancy, how long you will live, will always be a guess. But things like family history of longevity and being in good health could give you a higher probability of living a long life. This matters in relation to when you take Social Security, because it could determine how much you draw from the system over your lifetime. If you live to the age of 75, taking your benefit at age 62 will pay you $257,000. So it's like a quarter of $1 million. That's if you live at age, if you live to age 75 and you've started Social Security at age 62, roughly you will have collected $257,000. If you take it at age 66, instead of age 62, you will get roughly $237,000. That's like 20 grand less. And if you wait until age 70, you will get $174,000. That's a lot less. Now, that all assumes that you croak at age 75. Now, if you live to age 80, you will get $356,000 if you start at age 62. You'll get $369,000 if you take it at age 66, and $348,000 if you take it at age 70. I hope you're writing all this down, ladies and gentlemen. If you live to the age of 85, that's when it really starts to pay off. That's when waiting really pays off for you. So you live to age 85, you will have collected $455,000 if you started at 62. $501,000 if you started at age 66, and $522,000 if you waited until 70. The shorter you live, the more sense taking your benefit early makes, while the longer you live, the more you can get from the system if you delay that benefit. And if you have an average life expectancy of around 80, taking it at your full retirement age could work out the best for you. Number three, how much you've saved or will have saved. Social Security is a guaranteed income source that you'll have in retirement. And if you're the average American, it could make up about 40% of your pre-retirement income. You might also be a lucky individual that has another guaranteed income source like a pension. And the more money you have coming in, the less you need for to be saved. But for many people, making up for the rest of this income depends on how much you save. If your expenses in retirement will be $40,000 and your income is $20,000, you'll need, let's say, an additional $20,000 each year if you plan on covering them. If your income sources add up to $30,000 and you'll only need $10,000 then, using this example. Studies have shown that if you have a portfolio invested 60% in stocks and 40% in bonds, your risk of running out of money in retirement is lowered if you keep your withdrawals at no more than 4% of your account value. So with a $20,000 deficit between your income and your expenses, you would need a beginning account balance of $500,000 in order to achieve this. But with a $10,000 deficit, you would only need $250,000. Number four, whether or not you'll still be working. Now, remember, these are four things that you must know before claiming Social Security. I don't think that's exactly true. There are four things that it would be nice to know. I mean, for one thing, you're not going to really know how long your predicted lifespan is. But this is number four in the list of things that would be good to know before you decide when to take Social Security. Number four, whether or not you'll still be working. Work part-time during retirement could count as one of your income sources and mean that your Social Security payments won't need to cover as many bills. So if you have $40,000 in expenses, you get $20,000 in guaranteed income sources and earn $10,000 from working, you'll only have a $10,000 gap, which could lower the amount of retirement savings that you'll need. Whether or not you work in retirement also matters, because if you work too much of it, it could affect your payments negatively. In 2021, if you are under your full retirement age, which is around 66, I think, you will have $1 deducted from your monthly payment for every $2 that you make over and above $18,960. If you turn your full retirement age during 2021, you'll have $1 deducted for every $3 that you earn above $50,520 up until the month before you get to your full retirement age. This is starting to get a little confusing. I can see Randy. Normally, Randy is paying rapt attention to every syllable I say, but in this case, he has passed out. It looks like he's going to need to get splashed in the face with some cold water. Anyway, if you're thinking about taking Social Security early, but the amount that gets deducted is significant, you may reconsider delaying until your full retirement age when there are no penalties for working. I think that's the takeaway from this paragraph. If you are working and earning a bunch of money and you don't want to be penalized, then don't take Social Security until you decide to stop working or until you know your income is going to be really low. And then the concluding paragraph of this article is there is no universal right time that you must take Social Security, but there is an age that could be better for you than for others. And planning in advance for it and answering important questions that could either boost or lower your payment is crucial for making the best decision for you. Well, now how am I going to wake Randy up? He's got to be pushing buttons pretty soon. Oh, there he is.
Oh, I'm awake.
Oh, good.
You didn't hear me snoring, did you?
No, because you had your mic off. That's the only reason.
Oh, that's probably good. Well, you know, I was just going to let you know, Doug, that I have an investment secret that I've probably held too close to the vest for too many years. I've got all of my retirement savings is invested in buffalo hides.
And how's that working out for you so far?
Well, you know, they're rare, so I'm hoping they appreciate in value, but I haven't had anybody ask me for a buffalo hide for years.
Well, I got to tell you my sad investment story. This just happened a few years ago, but back when I was a little kid, I became aware of postage and how you put a stamp on a letter, throw it in a box, and it'll wind up in some other part of the country. And that stamp, my first one I recall, was about 3 cents. And then somewhere along the line, when I was probably 6 or 7 years old, there was an increase in postage rates, and it went from 3 cents to 4 cents. So that was like a 33% increase in postage rates. Holy crap. You should have heard the gnashing of teeth and the beating of breasts.
I can imagine.
The clutching of pearls. And it was just a horrible, horrible nightmare. And the economy is going to go down the tubes. And eventually, years after that, the postage rates were raised again from 4 cents to 5 cents. Well, that's a 25% increase. That's still bad. I mean, that's inflationary. And, so now what are we at, 55 cents or something like that?
Well, yeah.
Never seen it go down. So a few years ago, when they came out with forever stamps, I liquidated every asset I had. And I went to the post office and I said, give me every forever stamp you have in this building. I bought hundreds of thousands of dollars of forever stamps. I couldn't even carry them home. I had to hire a guy with a truck and put them in the back of the truck. Took all these forever stamps home. And that was the year the post office decided to lower postage rates for the first time in their history.
Oh, my gosh.
So I took a real bath in forever stamp futures.
That's a great story. Well, you know, you're talking about postage. It's like 55 cents now, I think. I've got a postage machine. And I don't know if you know this, Doug, but every morning when I turn the postage machine on, it goes like a slot machine. You know, the numbers roll and it rings and all that kind of, and it lets you know that it won't be long before this is going to be worse.
Yeah. It's like pulling the handle on a slot machine. That's one less dollar you had.
Yeah. I can't believe that postage to get a little tiny envelope from here, my house to your house is 55 cents now, and I'm supposed to be getting reduced rates because I'm using a postage meter.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's not distance sensitive. So I could move to Alaska, and you would be able to send me stuff at the same cost. So distance sensitivity doesn't figure into the equation, except for the people that have to lug it around. When the guy goes from your house and he's almost at my where I used to live, and then somebody says, well, he's not here, he lives in Alaska now. Oh my God, I got to go that much farther and nobody's going to pay me extra. I think that's what the flaw in the postage system is. Wow. New distance sensitivity.
There is. So you've probably heard these stories before, but I'll tell you one quick story about odd things in the postal system.
All right.
And then we probably ought to thank our audience and sign off because we've run out of gas. But ultimately, there used to be a quirk in the postal law that they didn't really care what it was you were mailing. So what people did, this is a true story, but, you know, like they had a little kid that they wanted to visit grandma, you know, and grandma was, you know, in the big city and they weren't.
Sure.
They would mail their freaking kid to grandma for the summer.
Oh, okay. Now that seems a little weird.
No, it's true. It's absolutely true. And then the other odd story was there was some sort of a company, and talking about Alaska, that's what brought it to mind, is there was a company that wanted to build a building in Alaska brick. And yeah. they calculated it all out. Now, whatever made them think of this, I don't know. But it was cheaper at the postal rates at that point in time to mail the bricks to them one brick at a time for this building than it was to ship them.
Wow. Sounds like they might have been dealing with a union bricklayer. Now, I'm only allowed to lay one brick a day.
Well, oh, dear. Well, you know what we got to do, Doug?
We got to say goodbye to the audience.
We got to thank our audience. But before we do that, take your mouse and I want you to navigate yourself to Amazon.com. I want you to buy yourself a copy of Doug's new book, Medicare for the Lazy Man, easiest and whatever, bestest guide ever.
Simplest guide ever.
Yeah.
Just look for the red 2021.
Yeah, look for the 2021. And I kid you not, we're not teasing on this one. Get yourself several because every one you give to a family member that's turning the corner on that age will thank you immensely and effusively. So do that for me. But in the meantime, I want to thank you for joining us. You could have been anywhere and you weren't. You were listening to us and we thoroughly thank you for that. And we enjoy having you. And we're going to look forward to seeing you again next time on Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. You have just spent about 32 and a half minutes or maybe a little more today with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma.
And the Social Security expert.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you guys take care of yourself.
Thanks for joining us. Bye-bye.